Armstrong, 1320 WILS, 1320WILS.com. It's Ag Day at the Capitol. We're at the Ag Club breakfast at the Radisson Hotel. We're brought to you by Michigan Farm Bureau and Greenstone Farm Credit Services. Well, we've been talking with the industry leaders. We've been talking with folks in the administrative legislative branch, folks who deal in ag, but now we're getting to the real meat and potatoes. Doug Darling is a Monroe County cash crop farmer. Doug, good morning to you.
Good morning.
All right, tell us about your farm in Monroe County.
Well, we're a sesquicentennial farm that's been in the family since 1833, so we're still trying to get it right. The farm's been in the family. I'm the sixth generation there, and we run cash crops, corn, soybeans, wheat.
How many acres do you have?
We run about 1,500 acres, and then we also do some custom harvesting.
And tell us about the farm with this wet weather. How's that been for you?
It has been an interesting fall. It's been still ongoing for a number of farmers in southeast Michigan. There's still a fair amount of crops out in the field in spots just because it turned wet. It was a very wet fall, and we were kind of concerned about soil compaction, so you're trying to minimize what damage you did to the soil with the heavy equipment, and we would have liked to have a really good, cold, hard winter to freeze up the ground and thaw it out, or to get the heaving to help mellow that soil, because there's going to be a lot of tillage that's going to have to take place, even on the no-till folks.
Well, you mentioned corn, hay, wheat, soybeans take up the majority of the farmland that you have, and also the majority of the farmland in Michigan. Why are those particular crops so important for modern agriculture?
Well, you've got so many different products that you can derive out of any portion. And here in Michigan, the number one segment for production, you have the dairy industry here in Michigan, so you need to have feed for those animals, and that's where the corn and soybeans come into play that way, and you've got the hay, that we're all interrelated. No matter what commodity you grow, it has interaction with others. And then when you look at the value added, what we've been able to generate out of, say, take corn, for instance, for whether it's for feed or for ethanol or for export, the different values that we've been able to create there, and that's what's helped make the past few years in ag the better 3 years we've had in the last three, 4 decades. It's been a long, rough road.
Well, I feel like I'm out on the farm now. We've got that big, booming sun coming in on us right now. Now, when we think about agriculture in the state of Michigan, do you feel the governor and the legislators have given you the tools that you need to be more successful?
It's been amazing what the past 15 months, the change in perspective, looking at agriculture and looking at all business in Michigan and the type of respect, because they recognize that's where jobs are created. People that are willing to risk their money, create businesses, that creates employment, and the recognition agriculture has had, because we're here to stay. Like I say, our family farm's been there since 1833. We talk about the Hollywood industry, movie industry coming in. There were discussions about what their tax abatements and breaks were. You know, they're pulling their move anywhere. We in farming, we're here to stay. We're part of the community. We've been raised here. We're not going anywhere.
I know you don't want to throw anyone under the bus, but I'll ask the question, from Granholm to Snyder, what's the difference?
Well, it's
specifically.
Specifically, you're seeing more of a focus coming out of the Snyder administration of recognizing business, recognizing agriculture, doing things that are proactive, things that are incentives, like the passing of the meat bills, which is a voluntary, environmentally friendly program where it gives some incentives to agriculture to step up and do additional conservation things, do other things that are beneficial to the environment, and recognizing those in there's a stick and carrot kind of approach, and they've recognized and engaged ag and asking, what do we need to do to make this industry better and stronger?
The crops that we were talking about, it's not your grandfather's farm anymore, especially when we start talking about science and biotechnology, and you start talking about super crops, and that makes people a little nervous. Talk about that.
Well, that's an excellent question, because agriculture, we're financially doing reasonably well here the past few years, but we're also living in a day of a lot more activism. You're seeing groups that are coming out that they're opposed to the GMO, the genetic modified, or they're opposed to some technology, or opposed to different things or practices, and we're fortunate in this country. We have a choice. We have a choice of what kind of food. If you want to buy organic, you can. If you want want to buy, you know, the lowest price you can and affordable. We're fortunate we have choices here, and we've seen groups that have come forward trying to either regulate or prohibit us from doing things. And to me, the bigger concern is not here now, but when you figure that by the year 2045 or 2050, we're going to have 9 billion people on this planet. And you know, this morning we woke up and there's about 7.2 billion people on the planet, and every one of us, no matter what your nationality, culture, religion, we all have something in common. You and I, we both woke up, we're hungry. And we're going to have 9 billion people. We're going to have to grow more food than we've ever done in the history of this planet, and in order and do it with less natural resources. So you've got to come up with technologies, and whether it's genetic engineering or new techniques, new equipment. The cost of equipment's gotten really expensive. But we're going to have to be creative and not be afraid to engage anything and not limit what we have the ability to try to
do. When we talk about genetic modification of domesticated agricultural crops and livestock, that's been going on for a lot longer than recent, hasn't it?
Actually, you could go back centuries, because we've been genetically modifying our crops or our livestock. When you took your biggest bull and your best milking cow and you crossbred them, you were going to get a genetic modification, but it was random in results. We've just gotten smarter now that we can take through technology and the ability that we can select what that change is going to be, or try to change to select that. And so really, genetic modifications have been going on by man and the environment for centuries. And all we're doing is being more specific, more selective of how it happens, and you know, engaging that way.
All right, Doug, finally, I wanted to ask you about this mild winter. Even around my house, I'm seeing ants and some elder bugs, and I just wondered how the mild winter has affected field crops like yours.
Well, across the state, we're hearing different guys that they're getting antsy because it's warm. It's warmer than what it should be, you know. And but down in my neck of the woods, we're still unbelievably wet. We got a tremendous amount of rain. The fields have been wet all fall, and like I say, there's still some crop out there. And I know some guys have got to combine some soybeans or shell some corn yet before they're going to do anything this spring. So it's going to make it interesting, and it's also watching the markets and seeing that there's opportunity to lock in some profit or covering your costs for the next coming year. So, yeah, we're Mother Nature. You know, it's sunshine right now, but who knows? We may have a snowstorm in 2 weeks.
All right, we've been talking with Doug Darling. He's a Monroe County cash crop farmer. Thanks so much, Doug. Appreciate it. You're listening to the Tony Conley Morning Show on 1320 WILS. 1320.